Hey everyone, welcome to Open Source Growth. This is Dean speaking, founder and director of Owen Denny Digital. And in today's episode of Marketers Talk Smack, yes, this is a new segment to the Open Source Growth podcast. On today's episode, I have Connor Rath with me. We shot an interview a few weeks back now, and we are finally getting a chance to publish it up here on our podcast. We're going to go through everything from being a digital nomad through to customer acquisition costs to the attribution mirages and everything that modern marketing agency owners go through and experience. It's all going to be covered here, and I can't wait for you to experience it for yourself. So without further ado, I'm going to drop you right into the middle of our conversations. I hope you have a lot of fun. Talk soon.
Factor these things in when you're a videographer. It's just not on. Like, when you see somebody actively say, hey, I can't do it today because I can't get a park, it's like, you are meant to build this into your system, brother.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
The digital marketing equivalent is like your credit card gets declined and then they're like, oh, we can't do it. Nah. Sorry.
Don't know. No, it's worse. You know what it is? No. It's, do you know what it's like? It's like this. Oh, no. My laptop went flat. I can't run your ads. It's well. No. You prepare for this. You have a power cord. Plug it in, et cetera. Like,
oh my God. Mate, how does an agency owner get to your level that you can take time off to create content? How have you set things up to have one of your biggest months?
Yep, and still create content and
yeah,
do all that stuff.
You're obviously not in the weeds anymore. You're not even on the weed whacker.
You're sitting
an old fashioned, having a Cuban, watching all your freelancers and.
Nah, look, to be frank, it's been a busy month. Like, I've had to, I'm not going to lie, I have been a little bit on the weeds because part of the work that we do with our enterprise clients, I'm involved. I'm involved from a strategic perspective. I'm coordinating like my SEO lead. I'm coordinating copywriters, heads of marketing, et cetera, et cetera. So with the enterprise clients we have, and it doesn't take much. It takes like, if you close one enterprise client for an agency my size, that's like an additional 20% in revenue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, oh, you close one enterprise client. Oh, I had my biggest month. Like, no shit. You just had this massive ball of income, like, roll your way. But yeah, I think how you can manage like the content marketing plus the Facebook ads, plus the this, plus the that is this is just my view. You need to be ruthlessly effective with your time. That's just the truth. You know, like, you have to spend your Sundays planning the week and then Monday to Friday or Monday through to like Saturday morning executing. That's all you can do. And when it comes to growing the business, like, my personal belief is you're not ever entirely sure which traction channel is going to give you the growth. Like, good example, I had a Forbes listed entrepreneur join our agency after listening to my podcast about how my dog Zoe runs A/B split tests on everyone in the family. And she heard this podcast and now she's an amazing coaching client. She is the best coaching client I have. She's incredible. She's the smartest human being that's ever walked into the coaching sphere that I've stepped into to help people out with their direct response advertising. And yeah, like, she's a god. Like, she's a goddess when it comes to running campaigns and stuff. But you know, that came from a podcast. My podcast probably has less than 1,000 total listeners.
Yeah.
You know, then I've got
Google ads attribute that lead?
No, so basically this was the conversion path, and this is why you have to be so careful about attribution.
Yeah.
So this is what the conversion path was. She listened to the She listened to Spotify. I couldn't attribute that, but I knew that there was a listener in a particular part of the world, which it all made sense looking back at it. I then received a LinkedIn email from her asking, hey, you mentioned on the podcast that if you can't afford an agency, you need to find a marketing coach. So I was wondering, instead of trying to find a marketing coach, would you coach me? Yeah. Then that went to a HubSpot link. We booked a meeting, back and forth, figured out what the solution looked like, and we went ahead. And so Google Analytics had nothing to do with it. HubSpot only had something to do with it, but you could never properly attribute that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Like, I think the challenge that we face now as B2B marketers is the fact that if you're looking at like Google Analytics, like that's king, that's great. That's only capturing website activity, but it's not really capturing revenue driven activity. So if you're looking at like, it's when you look at it like a full system, man, it's like you're looking at only a small section of your entire revenue growth. You know, when you're looking at a website, you're only looking at where people get in touch with you. Like, you're not looking at like what's actually leading to sales, and you're not really able to attribute beyond Google Analytics there. That's why it's so crucial that you have a CRM that has some form of like website analytics function built into it. Hence why we're like so staunch about HubSpot nowadays. Like it is the duck's guts. I know Go High Level does pretty much 80-20 of what you needed to do, but we like HubSpot, you know?
Yeah. And attribution, I mean, we know where it's at and we have the knowledge on where the attribution is for the channel, but then communicating that to a CFO, say like a corporate company, and you have a CFO who's pure numbers driven and has his revenue records in his sales CRM or his back end.
Yeah.
And then he goes to the marketer like, your numbers don't make sense.
Mm.
Where do you start that conversation in explaining attribution mirages, over attribution on certain channels, under reporting? Like, do you explain it simply, or do you try and get them to the level of just, you know, the level that you're at? Do you try and educate them up to that level, or
the hardest part about it, especially when you're working with CFOs, it depends on the mindset of the CFO.
Yeah,
you know, like if that CFO is really interested in the numbers, dude, you go to town, you give him the gold suite of how attribution modeling works. Right.
Zoe's going to break out the whiteboard.
Yeah, that's it. Well, it's always really simple, right? Like it's simple in the sense that like, oh, you can communicate with, oh, say Facebook ads, for instance. Like the common way we attribute Facebook ads is either 7-day click or view of an ad, right? Whereas Google ads, you actually legitimately have to click on the ad. Otherwise, you don't get anything from it. So like, if you think about the attribution models, which are better, so to speak, I would say Google ads is a better platform. However, it has been a glitchy means of attributing ads as of late. Like I've noticed massive discrepancies between what we see in HubSpot and the Google ads platform and pretty much throughout the entire CRM. So like in answering your question, I think you empower them with the information that will make them take ownership of their situation and help them make an empowered decision. You cannot under communicate this enough with attribution, but this all comes down to, at the end of the day, the marketer is doing the right job when it comes to qualifying leads, scoring leads appropriately, actually getting the salespeople to maintain the CRM, because they may need to manually update the source and medium down the line, right? So a good example is that, for instance, we have people who hear about, you know, they like just say one person speaks to another person and then they find out about a brand, but then they only click on, say, the Google ad, or they only click on the Facebook ad that came through, and then they become a customer, right? Hypothetically, let's just say that's the way it worked. According to the attribution model, is the Facebook ad responsible? Like the marketing agency wants to say that the Facebook ad's responsible, but realistically, it was that that word of mouth conversation they had with their friend Doris or whatever. That's what drove the entire conversion. So if you've got the right CRM or the right attribution model, you should be able to either make notes in your CRM based on that contact, or even manually edit the the original source and medium of how that person came in. So I think it's crucial that, you know, marketing and sales work hand in hand to properly attribute where the deal's coming from, and not just look at it from the perspective of marketing, you generate leads, sales, you turn the leads into sales. You have to look at it as like an entire team. It's like, okay, we're all responsible for revenue.
Yeah.
And if we're all aligned when it comes to, okay, what's going to drive the most revenue today? That's when you get marketers generating higher quality leads. That's when you get salespeople properly nurturing leads. You know, but it's the segmentation of sales and marketing which fails. And because it's often the segmentation of sales and marketing, the CFO analyzes each individually based on a spreadsheet, and it's game over.
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And I like your framework of having a CFO thinking of source and medium.
Yeah.
Yeah. Allocating sales to marketing efforts. So I think that's really good.
Yeah. And the hard part is, right, that the CFO needs to be properly aware that certain channels take longer to generate results than others, right? So if you're running LinkedIn ads, like, this is really simple. Like LinkedIn ads or Facebook ads or Google ads, you'll see results within a month most of the time. If you know what you're kind of doing, if you do some really good tests in the first month, you're going to see some tailwinds within 30 days of running ads. But for instance, just say you're running a podcast, you can't quit that after a year. You need to be committed to launching 3 to 5 episodes a week for an entire year and know that that's actually not going to generate much until you hit this critical mass, and then all of a sudden everybody's listening to your podcast.
Yeah.
So it's
starting to sound like Chris Walker from Revenue Labs.
He is my spirit animal. I love Chris. I think he is the best B2B marketer on the planet, without a doubt. Like, he is a machine. Have you been watching his content?
Yeah. In the past, I've just been like, listen to this whole podcast episode, please. I've just done demand generation, demand capture, attribution mirage. And it's just like a crash course for, I like to think, yeah, even non-marketing people can understand it, and it just presents it all in an engaging way, because as soon as you start overly technical, yeah, you've lost these people, and they think you're just talking about marketing. Right. I think it's good to just align with CFOs and other stakeholders within the business at that C-suite level and be like, we are all responsible for revenue.
Yep.
And let me align with you on the metrics of success we have, the metrics of success. And so that way you can keep me accountable for our projected targets.
Yeah.
And let's constantly work on your source and medium allocation of revenue to our marketing efforts.
Oh man, it would make such a huge difference. Mm. You know, like on this one as well, that the crazy part about a lot of these CFOs and these marketing departments, the grill marketing agencies, is that they will talk all day long about cost per acquisition. They'll be like, oh, our CACs are too high. It's costing us, you know, 3 months worth of revenue to acquire a customer. And they'll give you like the entire rigmarole around that. But then if you ask them, so what's your lifetime value of each of your customers in 3, 6, 12 month, 5 year and lifetime intervals? Can you give me an indication of how much a customer actually spends with you over the lifetime? There you go. It's absolute crickets. And the crazy part about it is that they set up these literally like plucked out plucked out of the air, you know, KPIs for their cost per acquisitions or their CACs or their cost per lead or cost per sales call for lead or cost per demo. And then all of a sudden they hold everybody accountable to it, but they really have absolutely no idea like what is the reasonable amount to pay for that customer, you know? And it's just so crazy that the only way you can truly neutralize a hostile situation in the boardroom with a lot of these characters is, hey, look, I understand that we're trying to drive cost per acquisition down, but the real money in business isn't made on the front end by acquiring customers cost effectively. The real money in business is by making customers spend more over a longer period of time. Like, how much bigger and better would your business be if you never lost a customer?
Amen.
You know what I mean? Like, I just see
probably some applause emojis right now.
Some applause emojis. That's mad. I love that. But you know what I mean, Con? Like,
oh yeah, definitely.
Like, it's just frustrating, you know, when you're in the agency game, you're doing a bang up job. You know, you're reducing their CACs by like 30 or 40%, and all of a sudden the goal each month is like, oh, we need to keep on driving this down. But by driving this down, you're sacrificing lead quality. It's just part of the game. And by reducing your lead quality, your sales conversions plummet. That means you're probably spending more on marketing. Sales conversions plummet. And therefore you're like, oh shit, I'm spending all this money on marketing, all these low cost leads. Marketing's giving each other high fives and shit. Then sales are like freaking the hell out because they're never going to meet target. And then the CFO is like, we're spending all this money on marketing. The salespeople aren't targeting. And then they just lose it. And all of a sudden they fire the entire marketing team. They fire all the salespeople and they start fresh. And you're like, no, this is because there's this epidemic or pandemic. I don't use any alarmist words, but here's the problem. Everyone is freaking out about reducing the CACs instead of figuring out what are we willing to spend based on our lifetime value. So just say you've got a pizza shop, right? Like, this is the craziest shit about all of it, right? Just say you've got a pizza shop in just say fucking not Eagle Farm, right? And you are willing to spend $100 to acquire a customer. And Jimmy next to you owns a similar pizza shop. Just say he's like across the street or down the road, and there's two pizza shops on the same street. I know it's not good competition, but whatever. Just say he's only willing to spend $50 to acquire a customer. When it comes to demand gen time and you're both running ads, you're going to acquire all the customers because Jimmy's being too stingy down the road because he's only willing to spend $50 to acquire one, and you can go hard. Jimmy's worried about making profit on the front end on his first order. You're just worried about giving people an amazing experience on the front end so you can maximize the lifetime value. Who's going to win? Of course, it's going to be you, not Jimmy down the road. Jimmy's a stingy bugger.
Yeah.
And it's because of the fact that Jimmy's obsessed with getting as close to profit as he can on the front end, whereas you're trying to figure out the lifetime value because you know a pizza customer is going to come in two times a month. He's going to probably have an average order value of $45. He's going to buy the higher ticket items, which are like obviously your pizzas. He's going to buy garlic bread. He's going to buy, you know, 7-Up or bloody Pepsi Max at the checkout or whatever. But like, it's just so frustrating that like we're so obsessed with low cost CACs, because as soon as you have this paradigm which is stuck in, hey, I need to acquire customers as cheaply as possible, you're never going to be able to grow, because the only way you're going to be able to grow is by being able to recognize that you can spend as much as humanly possible for a customer, right? And it's the old Dan Kennedy expression, he who can afford to spend the most to acquire a customer wins. And if we just had a revenue aligned, like, all-encompassed approach to growth marketing and growth selling and just general business growth, we'd be in a much better place. But
and this is not some like wacky marketing speak prediction. Like, this is straight mathematics. Like, this is the probability of a customer coming back with a certain frequency of purchasing an average transaction value. So if a CFO or if the team isn't aligned on that perspective, it can be so damaging.
Oh, and yeah.
you're just really capping your growth. And why is it on the marketers onus to educate everyone on something that's straight numbers?
Yeah, what are your thoughts around that? Like, why do you think it's just on the marketers?
Well, I think it's just a lack of kind of knowledge, and it's actually really hard to have your clarity on everything that's happening at once.
Yep.
To have that long-term clarity on each individual customer, to have the confidence in your brand that you will get those customers to come back.
Yep.
To actually have done the calculation to begin with on what you can actually spend to acquire a customer.
Yep.
A lot of it, like, I think a lot of CFOs and, well, marketers in general, I don't want to be like, you know, targeting salespeople here, but I mean, we're all salespeople at the end of the day, but I think everyone should just really be well-versed in being able to calculate all those metrics that are on those, on like that default Shopify dashboard. So if you look at the Shopify dashboard, reason why that platform's so good is because they have that inbuilt data. And those templates that convert so well.
Yeah.
They measure conversion rate ongoing compared to previous periods. There's returning customer rate. There's average car value. There's sales period with breakdowns on where they've come from. So it's, everyone needs to have that, that understanding of all those modern day numbers for your business, because everyone's online these days, and not knowing it and ignoring it, or just still just focusing on, you know, customer acquisition cost is kind of straight up negligence.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to just kind of just really hone in on customer acquisition cost. But it is also very hard to have that full perspective on, you know, the allocation of spend to brand awareness that will actually kind of add brand equity, if you will, and have a ROI from a financial statement or balance sheet perspective. So
it can get
gnarly, but I think everyone just needs to be very direct and confident with customer lifetime value, and making sure that you're not having that argument about you know, long-term ROI. It's really just in the numbers, in customer lifetime value, purchase frequency, average transaction value, and all of the other things that go into that to really support that data-based understanding of what we can spend to acquire more customers and why we want to be spending like more than probably what's profitable to acquire more customers, because you're going to go to your competitors. And that's the kind of final line. Like, that's the final thing. Like, those customers could just be going to your competitors. So I think that really just brings sobering awareness to a lot of conversations when competitors are mentioned and giving money to people you hate. So
It's funny you say that. It's like every time I run an ad, I'm thinking, oh, hang on, actually, here's a great example, right? And I think most marketing agencies, we can all say, like, if someone thinks of digital marketing agency in Australia, what's the first thing you think of? We could say our own businesses, but we know it's not the truth. Based on the positioning, what's the company you think of first?
King Kong.
Absolutely. And it's because of the fact that he has absolutely hammered us for years and years and years. Now, Connor, you're in a marketing agency owner. I'm a marketing agency owner. Tell me this. Have you ever heard of someone that went either to King Kong instead of you, or they've come from King Kong to you?
Oh, definitely.
Everyone has. Like, everyone who runs a marketing agency, which half knows what they're doing, they've all been either, they've either gone to King Kong, or they've chosen not to go with King Kong. Or they have gone to King Kong, got burnt, and come to you. It's like, it's a worst case scenario, but that's what happens when you develop like that super duper high power positioning in the game. And it's interesting when you talk about customer acquisition costs. I'm just thinking, Sabri Subi, like, without a doubt, probably without a doubt, Australia's best B2B marketer. Without a doubt, probably the best guy in direct response advertising out there from Australia right now. Probably, I would say, like, Southern Hemisphere. Like, he's tip of the spear.
But you just think, oh shit, if I'm running Facebook ads for myself and I really want to scale, it's going to cost me a fortune to go about taking on Sabri's fire-breathing dragon. However, that's the reality of the situation. He knows that he can spend more to acquire a customer more than anybody like on the planet. And he goes for growth. He's not going for profitability. He is just going for growth. And, you know, as a direct response advertiser, you know exactly what they're doing. So you have to, you know, obviously find the pockets in the market where you can acquire those customers more cost effectively to begin with. But then as you go up the, you know, the agency ladder and you start acquiring larger and larger enterprise clients, it's when you start like stretching out your AMEX limit to be like, okay, we have to go for it. We have to spend $2,000 to acquire this customer, $10,000 or $25,000 to acquire them. So yeah, crazy.
Or raise the capital to do so.
Sometimes you need to. You know, like it's just part of the game.
Acknowledge you're scaling up and you're a scale up, and yeah, you need capital so you can, you know, do the highest and best use activities that are going to get you that growth. And, you know, have the team to do it.
100%, man. Like, how are things going at Wrath? Like, what's working, what's not working? Obviously, you've had a chill year this year so far. You've just been partying, living up the life like Jerul. Like, so what's been going on?
Had two international holidays. I've visited wineries.
Yes.
I've been on many different staycations. And everything has been growing sustainably. And
so good.
It's not my ideal thing to work as a digital nomad.
Yep.
And but I definitely do like the working holiday, and I've made a very what we've started to do is really just grouping meetings on 2 days of the week.
Yep.
And we found that works really well, and just and really enjoying a working holiday as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have, you know, meeting days and then days where you're working, and then also unstructured time to basically enjoy the location you're in.
Yep.
And that may even mean working earlier in the morning or later at night.
Yep.
Around whatever activity you have. And you get like really good work output from it if you structure it the right way. And we've actually got a team member right now. She's in Europe traveling. Yep. And I was pretty hesitant to give her the same free reins that I've got. And we're doing really well. It's working really well, even though the time zone is quite difficult.
Yep. Yep.
Segmenting the meetings, having meetings later in the day to reach that that difference in time zone.
Mm-hmm.
And using more project management tools and less meetings is something that has just had to happen within the agency.
Yeah. So talk to me about that. Like, what's going on? Like, you're using Monday.com. Our agency has a love-hate relationship with that platform.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you've got it to actually work. So,
yeah. We've read this book called Systemology, and we've gone systems mad. So, any kind of small issue we have, it's everyone knows how to make a Loom video.
Yep.
Loom now, you can blur out client specific data. So, you can make SOP videos, and you can make work instruction videos on your standards of delivering on certain problems or certain onboarding steps. And basically it's going to be a universal video where you can essentially then leverage a new hire or a new virtual assistant and basically get them onboarded to that process. My pet hate is really just training people on something that I've already trained someone else in the organization about.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like it's bringing me back to like university days, like just rote learning something over and over. I just detested it. And I'm just glad internally I just physically can't do that. So, so that's kind of where we're at. And a good mix of corporate, larger clients where, I'm working in the weeds certainly to set up the processes. But
yeah,
again, my brain is all about making systems, making repeatable processes that are getting results. Displacing my efforts with a VA or staff and really just leveraging the algorithm and celebrating those results. So
we're
really selling results and positioning ourselves on results, not the time spent, not the amount of calendar meetings we have, and not how hard we tried to make it work. That's really, I think, where we're at with our level of growth. And I'm sure that kind of mindset and strategy will shift. We're certainly not a Sabri Subi who can afford to spend hundreds and thousands on YouTube ads.
Yep.
Talking about how your ads are a turd. Flaming bag of...
It's gotten... How good has it gotten, though? It is actually so entertaining. It's interesting that Sabri's copy and his ads used to be just like so, like hard-edged American direct response, like in the back in the day. Like, it was so aggressive. But now he's really changed his tune and it's become more about like kind of like it's more like adutainment instead of like it's like advertising and entertainment. It's it's this real intersect.
He's a talented dude.
So talented. Like, you cannot, like, whenever people hang shit on Sabri, I just don't know why you can. Like, the guy has built a fire breathing dragon in King Kong. Yeah, I know that there are whispers out there in regards to like the contracts that they have at King Kong and the fact that it's very. Like, they've got direct response advertising landers, and like the landing pages are, you know, they use quote unquote best practice. Like, I've seen the campaign content they've created. Like, you see the content offers they develop, you see the copy that they develop, and all that. And it's so inspiring because everything is templated out and it's actually quite good. Like, everything's about an 8 out of 10 from a like purist perspective. Like, if you had Frank Kern or you had like a standard crack employee at King Kong put together a campaign for you, like, it's really quite special to consider like, you know, a marketing grad could come up with a full like Frank Kern-esque content offer to like strategy call full funnel, right? Like, it's really impressive. But the hardest part is that, you know, advertising and marketing, it's more than templates at the end of the day. And you really need a really solid understanding of, you know, the customer avatar you're targeting. And sadly, that does take experience to get that right, you know, to determine, oh, okay, like, what is the mass desire of the market here? Like, is there some societal changes which we can tap into to command people's attention? Like, what keeps these people up at night? You know, a lot of that stuff, it only comes through experience, and no template can really address that. You know what I mean? Like, it's all from this bad boy, you know, good old breakthrough advertising, wherever it is. Blur on me. There we go. Oh,
Mr. Schwartz.
There he is. So, it's all part of the fun, but that's good, dude. So, you know, it's interesting. The old digital nomad thing. I tried for about 3 to 6 months, failed miserably. Like, it's not so much it's not like I couldn't do it. It's just that I'm a creature of habit. I like my own bed.
Yes.
Are you the same? Like, did you feel the same way when you were doing all these holidays and working, and you're like, well, it wasn't digital nomading for you. It was just working holidays. It's a bit different.
I miss the memory foam mattress. I miss being able to drive everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the lack of air conditioning confidence when you travel around. It's still like, is the Wi-Fi going to be secure and fast?
Yes, that's a big one.
Mm-hmm. And it's exhausting. Like, you can go and say like a long train ride that 6 hours that has Wi-Fi and air conditioning, but like when you're in transit, you can't actually work for all those that time. Like, you're there's heaps of travel related admin. Yep. And it's exhausting. Like,
yep.
It's so exhausting just making sure you're switched on with your travel admin. Yep. And you can't go all in. It's certainly not doing any deep work. Like, you may be flicking through some emails. But yeah, we went on a sleeper train in Vietnam for 6 hours, and it was 4 bunk beds, and it was 2 people above us, and it was just a fucking nightmare. I ran out of data halfway through, and the plan was to work like the whole time, and it was just like, I've effectively done nothing, and it's just stressed me out completely. So yeah, I think if you're trying to party, work, and travel, you have to choose 2. You can't be traveling the world drinking on pub crawls and being a digital nomad, like, unless you've really got your shit dialed in and you're doing that, you know, 4-hour work week. But I failed before as well, like going to Europe with some clients, and off record, just literally just choosing the lifestyle of going to the Dublin pub crawl 5 days in a row over getting back to client emails and just literally coming back to ground zero again. So, and just giving everyone a massive discount that decided to stay. So it's just, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
But the working holiday is something I like. But if you need to, minimize the drinking and the partying and really, structure your meetings the right way. Actually have a team, which was the difference this time.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. Like, having a team is a beautiful thing in the sense that not only do you have people, you know, all working together to deliver amazing client outcomes, but you actually get to pass on, well, for me anyway, you get to pass on the baton or hand down the torch on what you're being so inspired to create in the first place. I think that's really, really special.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something which is really, really unique with, running a digital marketing agency. I don't really see, I don't think I could get passionate about like employing team members for an e-commerce brand or like a clothing brand or whatever. I just don't feel it's the same thing for me anyway. I know everyone's different, but because you're a professional services provider and, you know, your ideas and your strategy enables someone's business to literally go from X to 10X. Like, it's a really powerful and really meaningful transformation for someone's life. And you really make a direct impact. Like, I can see why people do things like teaching and stuff like that, because you really get to see a tangible impact in another person's life. But man, that's insane. I've never heard that expression. You know, when you try to do the digital nomad thing, you can work, you can party, or you can, what is it? You can work,
party, or travel.
Work, party, or travel. You can only choose 2.
Yeah. So of course you can party and work in your hometown and keep everything afloat. But as soon as you add that travel admin, like, you're just in the planes, trains, it's exhausting, especially in Southeast Asia, or if you're in like Europe and it's winter.
Yep.
And you're from Queensland, you don't actually own a jumper. You just wear a sleeveless puffer with RMs.
I've got one of those. I've got a Scotch and soda. It's not really a puffery, but it's pretty heavy going. But
I wear this for my corporate meetings.
Do you? love it. It's like full Queensland corporate. You know, man, here you go. You're just going through the marketing forecast, eh?
I can kick indoors and, you know, still maintain that aerodynamics, you know, not sweating too much. You know. Just keep the vital organs warm. It doesn't get that cold up here in Brizzy.
It doesn't, man. It doesn't. Now you've been in Brisbane for what, like the last 2 years, haven't you? Like, after moving back from the Gold Coast,
mate. I went long on Brisbane. I've only lived in the Gold Coast for like a year and a half, but I have not left Brisbane.
Yeah.
So it's paid off. It's literally the best place to live.
Mm-hmm. What's got you so bullish on Brisbane? Like, what do you really love about it?
I just think it's literally got so much still going for it.
Yep.
And I literally, I think just after COVID, we're number one. We're number one state, Queensland. Mm-hmm. And it's evident by the migration from all the Melbourne plebs.
No. This is my view. Hang on.
We'll have to cut that out.
Don't get me wrong. Like, the only reason why Brisbane is number one, and I'm surprised it wasn't already number one, though, FYI. But clearly, there's a problem here, Connor. And the problem is this. We have bad administration in Victoria, and plebs keep on voting people in. That's truth, right?
Yes.
Like, I don't get it, man. It's literally, we've got, like, honestly, well, this is just my opinion. These are not, may not be shared. We have literally probably one of the most corrupt, like, Victorian governments who literally do everything they can to pander to everyone but business owners, which literally is the backbone of the economy. And
yeah,
it's made it so difficult, you know. And it's interesting now that coming out of COVID and coming out of, like, the restrictions, and the hardest part wasn't, you know, letting the restrictions go and just business blows up. It was actually, the hardest part for someone like myself was actually rewiring my mindset to a pre-COVID mindset, you know, like.
Yeah. Because your COVID year was just a blowout in terms of sales, like, just based on your, like, a lot of your clientele was Victorian, and you were also within that just whole ecosystem of.
It was, you know what it was like, and it's like, because Queensland was very blessed in the way you guys handled COVID. Like, you guys were very lucky. What was challenging, right, Con, was that, you know, being in marketing, you are often, like, more in tune with your emotions than most people, because if you don't really understand how people are and things like that, you're going to really be struggling. But the hardest part was waking up every single day. Every Victorian was just talking about, when are we getting out, my business is dying, I can't pay this, I can't pay that. You just got inundated with, like, all these data points which form this tabletop of belief that, you know, I'm fucked, my business isn't gonna grow.
It's trend lines of depression.
It's insane. Like, people were killing themselves left, right, and center through COVID, you know, and the data will never be released. But, like, the truth of the matter was, is that, you know, everything around you pretty much screamed, you're fucked, you're in Victoria. And because it was
horrible,
the hardest, it's really difficult, you know, and it's taken me far out. Like, it honestly, the thing that got me out of my shit, I invested in some very good sales coaching and mindset coaching with a guy called Rowan Merry. And that was one of the few things that really got me out of it, number one. But number two, like, getting away on an international holiday to Europe post wedding, which you were at, my man, that was another thing that got me out of it.
Yeah.
Because the hardest part was, you were locked in Victoria for the better part of, like, a year or two. Like, you couldn't get out. And it was only by being able to get away from it, and also by challenging myself with additional trainings and stuff like that around sales and mindset, that was the only thing that got me out of it. Otherwise, I don't know where I'd be, you know. And yeah, tough times, man. Well, we went there.
Oof. yeah No, it's a testament to where you are now with the agency. And
like, it is, you know, like, don't get me wrong, this financial year has been up and down.
Yes.
And it's been up and down because I had a lot of things going on this year. Like, you know, I got married, I had a honeymoon, I've had two international holidays this financial year, you know, but I've also done my biggest months ever, you know?
Nice.
And it's like, how do you say it? Like, it's, you know, you can't, you know, sometimes you have seasons where it's mostly about your personal life, and then you've got seasons where it's about your business, you know, trying to be able to do it all at the same time. It's tough, but, like,
yeah, He'll be like his videographer. He's trying to do it all, just trying to get a park and trying to do his job. You know, he's juggling too many eggs. There's too many balls. There's two balls in motion. It's too many. Some people juggle.
Connor, I'm sure we can agree that that was one ball, a very small ball,
and he dropped
which
it.
The guy could not get his shit together. Like, for goodness sakes, like you. It is like 101 business. You get there 15 minutes early. You find a park. You arrive at your appointment 5 minutes early. You give an amazing service. You over deliver. You get paid on the day. You know, like, come on.
Yes.
It's not rocket science. Oh, man. So, like, we're coming up to the end of the financial year, and, you know, every agency owner is probably going to have their own thoughts around this in Australia. You know, we've seen some real interesting movers and shakers in our industry. Like, I'm getting a lot of advertising from a whole bunch of agencies up north. Like, I've got Journey Digital, which is hammering me at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm getting marketed by Dunk Agency, as we all know.
Yeah.
There's Reform Digital in Victoria as well, who's doing a fair bit of work. Got King Kong. Yeah. There's a lot of players that are coming to the game. And you're probably seeing it in your Facebook feed, and you're seeing people grow these massive agencies. And, you know, you can always wonder, it's like, oh, okay, great, my agency is doing well, but it could be doing better. What's on your mind? Like, what are you planning on? What are you celebrating this financial year? And what are you thinking of improving coming into the next financial year?
Yeah, that's a really awesome question.
Yeah.
I think first and foremost, you can't compare yourself, your journey, to anyone else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or even your level of revenue or how big your team is or brand. Yeah. Literally, because as you mentioned, you can only focus on, you know, one pillar most of the time of life, like whether it's your personal or your work.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm literally really enjoying the journey.
Like
we are reaching new heights with terms of revenue, gross sales. But I think one thing we definitely want to change is just that growth rate for the next year, which means spending more money and basically implementing different ways to get more business.
Yeah.
And creating content like this. And and just building that team out so there is no distractions. You're not in the weeds all the time where, as you probably know, like those brand building and growth initiatives sometimes fall by the wayside unless you've really already started to establish systems or you've delegated. Yep. Because I think I've kind of I'm guilty of this, and maybe some other people are as well, but just getting lost in the romance, if you will, of just day-to-day activities and basically just being like, well, it has to be done. I'm going to be doing it and not kind of doing it. Whereas, you know, there needs to be accountability and play owner of a digital agency, just delegating and focusing on growth 100% of the time. But on the other hand, as I said, really enjoying the journey and just not comparing myself to anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just need to set a more hairy, audacious goal for the next financial year.
Interesting. I've got a question for you on this. Because we can all say, oh, we love the journey and all that stuff. And it's funny, as an agency owner, like, did you find yourself doing more work for clients this year than you expected to be, or less?
This financial year, definitely less.
That's amazing. That's a good outcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was the driver of that? Was it great staff? Was it good systems? Like, what do you think was the main driver behind that?
A staunch opinion that I've had enough of being in the weeds doing junior activities.
Yeah, awesome.
So, team, getting the team sorted. And, just raising your standards and awareness that you cannot be doing those activities anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, moving more into having full confidence in driving strategy and consulting, which is helps me leverage time a lot better if we're a quick phone call here and there, quick meeting, as opposed to building a digital ads campaign.
Yep, yep.
And yeah.
Yeah. And you've mentioned that you are thinking about, you know, additional customer acquisition streams.
Yeah.
I know that Connor, like we all know, anyway, only us in the digital agency world, that you're like one of the sharpest dudes when it comes to like cold email and being able to scale out big campaigns. Like how many sends were you doing at peak? Weren't you doing like 10,000 sends a month or something ridiculous?
Me personally or for clients? Well,
for your agency anyway.
I lost track, but I think we were over like half a dozen countries sending near 100,000 cold emails a day. So it was
crazy.
It was a pretty awesome channel for this one SaaS case study that we did back in 2021. Yep. And cold emails the shit.
You love it.
It's good. It. That was cold calling.
What was that? Sorry?
Cold calling.
Cold calling as well.
It's one of my favorite pastimes.
Pastime it is. That's great. And see, it's interesting. Like everyone's got their own approach, right? Like you've got direct outbound. So you've got going with your cold email approach. You've got your direct outbound. How do I say it? You know, your cold calling prospecting as well.
Mm.
Like I know you've ran some Facebook ads on the Connor Rath Facebook page as well, just to try and, you know, generate some interest there. How did you go with those ads? Did they perform for you?
Actually, it was all learning from them. They didn't do too well at all. Yeah, Instagram video ads. And as to what I'm actually going to be doing is more video. So more videos. And I was just way too staunch in the videos. The viewer engagement was just dropping off completely.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So this conversational style content is where I'm going really bullish on.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it work really well as a brand builder and in terms of people actually watching videos. And literally just chunking up golden nuggets of real specific conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can build this massive picture for what your brand's like after just consuming all these pieces of content because we've strategically advertised it to you.
Yeah. So what you're now thinking is, oh, okay, cool. So less talking head, less, oh, okay, cool. Let's just be like, whoa, wait a minute, course creator, agency owner, blah, 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 blah. Let me do this and just go like hardcore with like straight offer sales, right?
Yeah.
Expect to be sold like a steak knife out there, right? but so you're actually pivoting to more like the real, hey, this is what's happening in the weeds. You're seeing the conversations that we're having. We've got the right marketers and advertisers on the platform that I'm speaking with, etc. And the social proof there, and also the content which is getting created, which is free flowing and conversational. You think this will be the way forward for Rath?
Yeah, I think half of it is demonstrating that we're creating the content that we would advocate to create for clients.
Yep.
And the other half is that we're talking about relevant topics that are somewhat engaging for someone who's our target customer, basically.
Got it. Okay.
That's it. I think I'm going all in on video because I'm extremely lazy and I think it's just easy to articulate the goods on video.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Yeah, I kind of have enough self-awareness to video and just like verbal is kind of like my favorite medium for communication. So even though that sentence was completely botched, but
that's okay. We can always download this off TLDV, upload it to Descript and like polish it. You're going to be fine, brother. Don't worry.
Those jump cuts, baby.
What was that? Sorry?
Those jump cuts.
Yeah, It's amazing, right? It's interesting. Like, I've got my own theories around how we move forward with our agency. Like,
yeah,
what I love about the digital agency world and marketing in general is that you've got so many different ways you can grow the business. Like, that's just the coolest part about it. Like, we've had very much an inbound approach, as you can see. You know, we've really heavily invested in our SEO. So, like, if you type in, like, SaaS advertising agency, we're number one. Like, we've just freaking knocked that out over the last year or so. We've got to go through and do some more technical SEO perspective work. We also need to work on our content on the website too. So that's what we're going to be doing moving forward.
Yeah, you're quite a lot of world class. You've got some really good web content. It's world class.
Yeah.
The content and the framework you've set up.
And
it's awesome.
Yeah, dude, I appreciate it. Like, we do have a real content engine now. Like, we've got, you know, we're creating like high value blog posts literally each week. We're launching 2 to 3 a week. We've got the podcast where we launch 2 to 3 podcast videos or audios per week. They get fully transcribed, show notes, everything. It's all done, published, boom, like clockwork.
It's on Instagram you're launching these videos or just YouTube?
No, so with our podcast, just YouTube at the minute, but there's not that many. Like, the one thing that's been holding me back is figuring out the best way to record high quality video. And also, this backdrop's a bit shit. I would like to get a better backdrop. I might need to do my podcasts in my living room or something. I don't know, which is really, really pretty, but we'll figure that out. That's kind of like our organic piece, because that can cover so much. If there's some good clips in there, we can turn them into future video ads and whatever. One of the things we're going to do, and this is probably, I'm going to give this one away because you'll figure it out anyway, is that if you have a podcast, what you do is you have your clients on the podcast. You talk about them, you enable that piece of content to be a high value piece so they can communicate about their customer, who they serve, what they want to serve, what's their state and opinion on their industry, et cetera. And then at the end of the podcast, you can talk about, hey, this is what we did with your campaign. We did this, that, and the third, and what were the results like? And all of a sudden you've got a video testimonial and they don't even know it. You know, and then you're like, hey, can we use this as part of our advertising? Yeah, of course, man. You're on the podcast. It's getting broadcasted to everybody. I don't care. This is amazing. Voila! You know what I mean?
Very sneaky.
No, it's not that sneaky, because they want to be on the podcast. Cool, right?
It's so good.
Like, my view here is that, you know, I think the podcast, that long form video is amazing, because you can then go snip, 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 and you've got some amazing content.
Yes.
But, like, you just need a team and a system where the content gets cut, assembled, and then turned into content. And that's the hardest part. It's not creating the content's actually sometimes the easiest bit. It's just then being able to snip it up, assemble it in a logical framework that will go about doing the right thing for your customers. So that's where the challenges come
from. The right videographer will be able to do that.
Yeah. But the hardest part about it is that the right videographer should be able to do it, but you really need the right video editor.
Post-production video editing. Yeah.
What was that? Sorry.
We've got a full-time guy who does that. And like, I've literally been through dozens of them and they're all fucking shit until I met this guy. He's an absolute gun.
Yep. Is he Australian based or is he offshore?
No, definitely not offshore.
Yep.
And so yeah, he's going to edit this one as well. And
that's so good.
He's so good. Like,
we have
not had a bad video from him, and he's doing high level luxury brands, luxury lodges of Australia brands, and nailing it. Like, you know, like luxury horse race events on the weekends.
Yep.
So really engaging, just gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's even done like high level Google Doc feedback on an existing client's YouTube ads and the music choice, special effects, and like cutscenes to use. It's just world class. You could work for Warner Brothers Movie World or something.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm so glad you found a resource, because they are so difficult to find. They are rare as hen's teeth.
They are, yeah.
Find a good one. Yeah, interesting. See, it's like back to where we were though. Like, I find it interesting how your plan, this is, you're going bullish on video. You're going to have longer form content. You're still probably going to be ramping up cold email, knowing you, and you'll probably be doing the odd cold call here and there.
Mm.
You're still a marketing led agency in the sense that you don't have like a full sales team, but your marketing approach is very direct. It's funny. It's like, you've got your own way of doing things. Whereas at Owen Denny, inbound content, SEO, podcast, Facebook ads, LinkedIn ads, Google ads. And it's really peculiar, like how it's just like, combine these together, you have like the biggest agency on the planet, right? But if you've got like two small agencies doing their own mojo, where we're tackling, you know, content offers, email marketing, you know, sales qualified lead offers, put them into a Calendly, fire them up, hit them on a landing page, get them onto the call, close the call. It's so interesting how it's like so many, do you just find it so crazy how like there's so many different ways you can do this? Like, yeah, we're even going to start doing challenges, man. We're going to do challenge marketing. We're going to do like, hey, welcome, this is the free 1-day challenge on how to triple your free trials with Dean Denny. It's going to be sick.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want, right?
It's crazy. And but the thing is, like, we're sold this lie that none of these things work and only my product works, or only my solution, or only my course works. And it sucks. It does, but it works. So we're all guilty of doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
No, I think, yeah, go the road less traveled, or just go the road that's in line with your personality as the founder. And
mm-hmm.
I like to think of what we're doing as somewhat abrasive compared to the traditional ways, but yeah, I just spit in the face of tradition because why not? Choose your own adventure. Just do it and have fun with it. It's all about face-to-face, belly-to-belly anyway. Like, at the end of the day, you're getting on it. Yep. You're connecting with one person typically who's going to decide to work with you and resonate. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true, man. Like, you have to choose your own adventure. You have to do what works for you, what works for your personality, what works for your set of skills, you know, like.
And yeah, like, yeah, we want to have consistent, measurable, repeatable results, right? And that's harder to do with the kind of guerrilla marketing stuff. I mean, cold email is probably one that is very repeatable.
It can be consistent, and that's very measurable.
Yeah, so it is.
I disagree. I think that's a very predictable means of getting clients.
Like, yeah.
Is it as predictable? No, I'd say it's just as predictable. There's enough data points to demonstrate there's predictability.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, for instance, you know, we're running our current campaigns at the minute. I just popped into HubSpot, saw what was going on. You know, we're paying $10 per marketing qualified lead for one of our marketing qualified leads. I'm like, okay, sweet. I'm building up this database, $10 at a time per, you know, per marketing qualified lead. They're not going to be ready anytime soon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like,
yeah, I've seen it. I've seen the offer.
Yeah, yeah.
I opted in.
What was that? Sorry?
I've opted in, but I haven't. I think I've been put in the marketing agency owner blacklist in your HubSpot.
Nah, dude. Oh, far out. You've got me thinking about this, man. I have had so many marketing agency owners pop themselves into it. It's so funny. And it's, you know what's funny? It's always the marketing agency owners that aren't doing any advertising. It's a real shame.
Mm.
Isn't it ironic? It's like you're just sitting on the peripheries of life, man. And you could be growing your business, but you haven't chosen to. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Or is it maybe the fact that people in marketing, we all have no idea. We all lack creativity and the willingness to do it, so we just figure out how they're doing it and we just copy them. I think that might be part of it.
Yeah, and a lot of people just aren't advertising. You have to be at a different level and confidence level to do that.
Can I say what I think I personally believe it is? It's very hard because of the fact that you're a subject matter expert. that, you know, not all customers you can get results for, right? Like, we all know it. Like, there are certain customers that have the wrong value prop, the wrong pricing. More importantly, they've got the wrong attitude. So they'll never get their marketing and advertising to work.
Yeah.
Wrong financial beliefs, wrong views on sales. They don't want things to sound salesy. They don't like gimmicky marketing. They, you just hear all this crap and it's like, well, how good are your beliefs right now? You're broke, brother.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it is le cooked, right? But like, the problem is, I find, is that it's always crazy to say that, hey, my solutions can get you to do this extreme wild claim, which is true, but you don't feel guilty, but you know, it's like, we use our extreme case studies to go about generating the attention and then acquiring customers. And I think the big problem is that a lot of marketing agency owners, they feel a little guilty about using those massive claims to go about commanding the attention, getting people to read their ads, and then closing the deals. You get what I mean? Like, this weird, maybe it's just me. I don't know.
I mean, that's a tall poppy syndrome for sure.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that too.
Imposter syndrome, which seems to be quite common these days.
It's prevalent, mate. It's a cancer.
But yeah. No, is there anything else we want to chat before we wrap it up?
Mate, what are you reading at the moment?
At the moment, I'm not actually reading anything. I'm listening to 10X by Grant Cardone. 10X rule.
Massive action.
Honestly, it's been awesome. I've had this kind of like this long tummy bug from Vietnam, and it's been really sapping my energy. So just listen to the 10X rule by Grant Cardone. I think I think it's really just the book I need right now.
Yeah. Interesting.
How about yourself? What are you reading?
So, I'm actually, you know what's really interesting? The last few years, I've been a bit like, the last year or so, I haven't really been reading a lot. But I've picked up this one, which is always a classic, one of my favorites, The Magic of Thinking Big by David J. Schwartz. Nice. That's a banger. It's one of my classics. I've read it like two or three times. It's a banger.
Is he related to Eugene?
What was that?
Is he related to Eugene Schwartz?
Don't know. Maybe you should check that out. I didn't make that assessment, but there we go. The other thing that I'm reading is The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand.
Okay.
So you know Atlas Shrugged, obviously, right? You've read Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand.
I've heard this guy.
Ayn Rand. It's the lady who wrote like Atlas Shrugged. It's that big, you know, that big one. It's like 40 hours to listen to, or
No,
I thought you'd read Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand.
No, I need to, obviously.
It's a they're Penguin classics. It's a book about an architect who didn't sell out and became infamous. It's amazing. It's actually cool. I think for someone like yourself, could be worthwhile. Yeah. You know, and it's interesting. Like, you know, it's fascinating, Connor. I've got a funny story for you. Well, we can wrap it up on this, right? We just ran this amazing like free website offer where we give you a free website and you get guaranteed growth and guaranteed leads and all this stuff, right? And we were selling to small business owners. That was our offer, like free website, free guaranteed growth. I'll work with you, blah, blah, like the most insane offer I've ever ran.
Yeah.
You would be shocked to see how few people took that up.
Really?
It's interesting. It's funny.
Was it because it had two layers to it?
I don't think so. I'll tell you why it is in a sec.
Okay.
The second thing was we started running our SaaS ads and we acquired customers like that. Here's the funny thing. Problem with number one with our massive big banger offer was that with the free website thing, guess what happens? You get all the people who haven't got a business.
Yeah.
That wanted websites so they can start a business.
So it's like step one, get a website.
Yeah, exactly. And so
step two, get an ABN.
Yeah, pretty much. Get an ABN, get a business, you're in business, right? Get some bank accounts, away we go. The second thing was, which was fascinating about this campaign, was that website development. Okay, tell me about your experience with your agency website that you've just built. Oh, it was a freaking nightmare. It took forever. I spent all this money. The web developer didn't do a good job. Bloody blah. I was just fighting all the time. Rah, rah, rah. That's what everyone's experience with the web developer is normally.
Yeah.
It's normally a shit show. So why would you want a free shit show? Why would you want a free headache? And then people don't even realize they need a new website because they think they just need marketing. You know what I mean? So like they don't even aware they have a problem. So they're unaware of a problem. If they want to get their website rebuilt, they know it's a headache and they know it's going to be free. So we just learned all these things, but it's so fascinating that like we went down the path of selling out.
Yeah.
All went to shit. We went down our to our true selves. We focus on SaaS. We grow SaaS companies. We help out enterprises. Guess what? Leads everywhere.
So specific offer, specific, like calling out a specific person.
That's it, man.
And a lot of people, when they want a new website, they don't say they want a new website. They want more leads. They want better web presence. And then it's like, well, to do that, you need a new website. And then it's always like a front end consultation period that's required to just kind of solve that problem for them.
Yeah.
Because no one wants to go through the bullshit of having a new website. Everyone wants the minimum viable website that just is fucking going to convert shit.
Yeah. Because everyone, remember, right? Everyone wants to spend as little as they possibly can to get the most disproportionately large result.
Yeah.
Right.
That's it.
And the hard part about it is that you as a marketer need to realize that you need to be spending a good part of your marketing budget willing to just piss it away. Like, you know, we allocate, you know, $3,000 to $5,000 a month on Facebook ads.
How much?
$3,000 to $5,000 a month.
Oh yeah, nice.
But the thing is, we know 30% of that is just going to be fucking rip it up confetti. You know, like we just have to accept it. It's part of the game. You know, like, oh shit, like we was like, oh, so this lead magnet did not work. Okay, let's kill that. It's never going to work. You know, it's just part of it. You got to remember that you're losing money. You understand your lifetime value. If you've got the numbers in the back of your head, I do, around most of the customers, whether it be enterprise or not, it's fine. It's good.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's awesome that you have the confidence to do that. Like, but how good is sales and gross profit? Like how good is getting that GP up and just knowing that you've just absolutely fucking ramped up that profit. And
yeah,
but yeah, it's give and take, and it's definitely pie in the sky knowing that, you know, you are going to have to sacrifice that margin.
Yeah, dude, it's like, it's at the end of the day, right? GP's cute. But it's your net, which is the thing at the end of the day, right? Yeah. But, you know, when you're in a growth business, like you pretty much are going for net zero profit in growth.
Yeah.
If you think about it, right? Like your whole game is optimized to be like, okay, cool. I pay myself a wage. I pay my team members a wage. These are our expenses every month. You're going for growth. You want to spend everything so you don't have any freaking, what do you call it? Profits. You want it to be to the point where you're just reinvesting and reinvesting, and all of a sudden everyone knows who you are. All of a sudden they're like, shit, what do these guys do? Oh, okay, I will then go about signing up for their lead magnet. Oh, great. I'll go about booking a free Facebook ads audit or a fucking Google ads audit or a T2 D3 growth strategy session or a free user explosion call. Like, it's a case of commit to this long term. Otherwise, it's not going to work. You'll half-ass it. You know, and as a digital agency which specializes in Facebook, Google, and LinkedIn ads, I'd be hypocritical if I was just using cold email. You know, like I better get my own shit working for me.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy times.
Yeah. Nah. It's awesome, man. Let's see how everything goes over the next year.
Yeah. Last thing before we go. What are your three boldest predictions for the next financial year?
I think ChatGPT is going to get better and better. AI is going to be more specific in the problems that it solves. Everyone's going to be more comfortable leaning on those solutions. Mm-hmm. Copywriters are really facing a lot of issues right now with ChatGPT. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to get better to the point that, you know, the copy from ChatGPT is better than what it is right now, which is going to be remarkable, like, because it is quite good at the moment. So,
are you paying for four?
I'm not even paying for it.
Dude, you're missing out. Get ChatGPT-4, it'll blow your freaking mind. The creative on that is like four times better. It is amazing.
Yeah.
Spend the $20 a month, it'll blow your mind. Just do it. You will be freaking shocked, dude. So we've got ChatGPT is going to get real good. What are your other ones?
I think the economy is going to tighten.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be the first kind of downturn that I've had at this level that isn't COVID. So I think it's, just going back to your fundamentals
mm-hmm.
is going to be important. Knowing your numbers,
mm-hmm.
as we talked about earlier. Yep. And to be honest, I think just going all in on sales at the end of the day, like that's it.
So sales, downturn, economy, AI is going to crush it.
Yeah, I think downturn, AI is going to crush it. And I think there'll be a point in time where it will just come back down to basics. But what kind of bold predictions do you have?
Oh, interesting. This is a good one for you. I think that we're going to have, this sounds wild, but I think that the CPMs and the cost of running ads on Facebook will rival what you're spending on LinkedIn for B2B services. Because we're seeing it in client accounts who have a very much a B2B focused, where the cost to generate customers and leads is one-to-one with Facebook right now.
LinkedIn CPMs have come down a lot.
They've come down so much. And I think there's going to be a point where if you're a B2B advertiser, that the only thing you'll be running going forward is going to be LinkedIn ads, because the cost of traffic with Facebook for B2B is going through the freaking roof. So that's my number one.
Yeah.
Number two, I think that with, you know, obviously there's a lot of challenges that we're all having with data and attribution right now.
Yeah.
So like my belief is that
Zoe agrees with that one.
Yeah, I think Zoe, it's worth barking about if you're a marketer, you know.
It is.
This is my view. I believe that if you don't have, especially if you're in B2B, right? If you've got like a proper like traditional like sales pipeline, if you don't have the right CRM that can take your ad data and take people from literally clicks on the website all the way through to deals and revenue responsible, like if you don't have that full sales to marketing like full picture, like if you're not running HubSpot, sorry, you're screwed when it comes to scaling with digital advertising come 2024. Like that is going to, you're going to be left in the water, because you're going to be having no idea what converts, no idea which contacts are coming through the door, no idea where they're progressing along the customer journey, no idea around the reporting.
Yeah.
You're going to lean upon some deadbeat marketing agency just to run some Facebook ads for you. You're never going to be able to attribute this. And then you're going to have this whole, you just didn't deliver on your promises. No, I delivered on the leads. And then all of a sudden there's going to be this crappy lead quality conversation, all this crap. You know what I'm talking about. We all do, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to happen. And if we don't get on top of leads and attribution, not just being measured at the website level or not just at like the platform level, being Facebook or LinkedIn ads or whatever, or MailChimp or the ActiveCampaign or Klaviyo or whatever, right? We need a whole view. That's why, you know, having a HubSpot or a GoHire level is going to be the most important thing a B2B business can have
yes.
in 2023-24. And then finally, my last prediction, and I think this is going to be my prediction, and this is a pretty crazy one. I think we're going to see some extreme attrition of
I think you're going to see some extreme attrition of the traditional digital marketing agency. I think we're going to see a lot of people close their doors over the next 12 months because they're not going to be able to move with the progress of AI. Like, we're going to see, combine that with the economic downturn, we're going to see a lot of website development agencies, like the traditional, you know, small business shops where you have like 3 or 4 web developers all building websites. They're going to fall by the wayside. You know, those typical things where they've got the copywriter doing stuff, like all that stuff. There's going to be a lot of loss here, purely because of the fact that business owners are going to become not only savvier around what they need with digital marketing, they're going to also have this belief that they can do it themselves. And the only people that are going to succeed in this new economy of AI-fueled marketing are going to be those that actually have like this sort of understanding, not just use ChatGPT to write your Facebook ads. Like, unless you understand the mass desire and the societal changes, the stages of buyer awareness, and how to go about polishing pretty good AI copy to begin with.
Yeah.
If you don't have that shit, you are completely screwed. You like, so they're my big ones. So we're going to go all out this year. We're going to be spending a lot of money on LinkedIn ads for our agency. We're going to be spending a lot of money on Facebook ads. We'll probably need to revisit Google. Haven't had many great results coming from our Google ads campaigns, but like there are some really exciting things that we're going to be doing this year from an advertising campaign, because we are just focusing on a very narrow customer, which is SaaS.
Yes.
And that's it, man.
Do you have like an upper growth limit? Like, you like, fuck, if we hit 20 new clients, we actually need to like hire and stop these engines on ads.
Yeah, great question. Great question. So short answer here is yes, we do have a growth limit. We have a growth limit each month. We can't acquire more than one enterprise client a month. That's our rule. We don't take on more than one enterprise client. Yeah. And if we've got small business owners, we don't take on more than, or smaller SaaS companies or smaller businesses or whatever, online brands, you name it. We wouldn't take on more than 4. So pretty much total number of clients maximum to acquire each month is 5. For us, we don't take on any more. And I will only work with one coaching client at a time. So
yeah,
part of the fun.
For those people listening at home.
Yeah, that's it, man. Get on board. Well, I can't at the minute. I've got my my dear pupil out of Singapore. She's an amazing human being and she's working hard at the moment. So I can't take anyone on for coaching at the minute. But when that opportunity does arise, I will let you all know.
Yes.
So, but there we go. But yeah, dude, I honestly, man, I think that if I was you, and it's me as well, is that go through the process of doing $100 million offers by Alex Hormozy properly. Like, spend the time and energy doing it.
Great advice.
Yeah, man. It'll change your life. Alex is the shit. All right, dude. I think it's been unreal. Thanks for jumping on today.
Legends.
Well, hopefully you can find yourself a better videographer next time, right?
This PLDV thing looks pretty awesome. Is this going to just record the video?
Yeah, it just records it, man. And then we'll pump it into Descript and have a bit of fun with it.
Okay, cool. All right, sweet.
All right.
Cool, man.
Good to speak to you.
Sweet, dude. Have a great weekend. And I'm sure we'll have some old fashions and cigars sometime soon.
Dude, I know. I'm dying for one. Hey,
it's your turn to come up to serve the.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
Let's get the diaries out. Speak to you when I speak. Put a weekend. Let's get our diaries out. Get a weekend away.
Dude, yeah, absolutely. Well, give me to the odds the end of the give me towards the end of the month. Let me finish this financial year. I do a whole heap of budgeting for next financial year. But yeah, definitely let's plan something. I'll use my Amex points to fly business and everything. It'll be fucking gangster.
Exactly. I mean, that's why you're doing it.
All right, dude. I'll speak to you when I speak to you.